As rich and as evocative as that gospel is, I want to focus on our second reading from Hebrews 12. It's this tale of two different mountains. Now, one of the things about Hebrews, we don't know who wrote it, but this is towards the very end. Clearly, it's written by someone who's deeply immersed in the Jewish way of life, the Jewish scriptures, and in the whole sacrificial system of the temple, which of course puts most of us on the back foot because we're not so richly immersed in such areas. And so it takes a bit of time to understand what might be happening. And so when we're given this opening line of the reading today, what you've come to is nothing known to the senses. And there's a whole series of things that it's not. Not a blazing fire, or a gloom turning to total darkness, or a storm, or trumpeting thunder, or the great voice speaking. Now, I've already said that this is a tale of two different mountains, but the author doesn't tell us what this first mountain is. So the background image is actually the mountain in question. So what is this first mountain? What is the event that is unfolding, that is being described here? It's Mount Sinai. It's when Moses led the people from slavery into that first moment of the wilderness experience. We read about it in the book of Exodus in chapter 19. So that experience of Sinai is such a key moment in the whole life of the people. But it was a wonderful moment, but it was also very frightening, because what happened, what unfolded in that place, was the very presence of God. But it was manifested in all of these ways. There was the fire that was burning on the mountain. There was this cloud that covered the whole thing, and this gloom and this storm. And then this voice, this most frightening voice. And all of the people were afraid to even approach the foot of the mountain for fear that they should die. And so this sense of this impending doom that was there. And Sinai becomes that whole sign of the way that God was under the old covenant, calling his people, nurturing them, inviting them into relationship, calling them into this sense, and then leading them eventually into the promised land, where they became a people and a nation, where they established the life and ministry of the new kingdom, where they eventually established a temple and the capital city there in Jerusalem. And so when we then move to what we have come to, we move to that experience of that life of God in the city of Jerusalem. And so in the background image there is Mount Zion, another name for the Temple Mount, the area in Jerusalem where David first established the city and then began that work of preparing the temple that his son Solomon eventually built. What you've come to is Mount Zion, the city of the living God. So first they began in the wilderness. They were there in the desolate place of Mount Sinai, but Mount Zion is in the middle of a city. It's that transformation from isolation to community that we experience our life as Christians, never as isolated individuals, but always being invited into the vibrancy of life of the city. And what is that city? The heavenly Jerusalem. And it's not even just us as a people, but we're gathered and surrounded by the millions of angels who are there in festive garb, wanting to celebrate life, gathered for the festivals. The Jewish people certainly knew how to party. The whole of the liturgical year was punctuated by these festival celebrations, and the church is meant to be an extension of that. We're meant to continue this whole process of being invited into the life and the celebration of God, a place where, with the whole church, in which everyone, every single person is a firstborn son. And normally I try to avoid, you know, exclusive sexist terms, but in this case, it's the most appropriate, because all of us, male or female, are invited into the dignity of the firstborn son, all that that entailed, all of the rights, all of the benefits, all of the wonder of being like Jesus, invited into the life of the firstborn. And so all of us are invited into this experience of being a citizen of heaven. But not just that, we're also called to come unto God Himself, into the very presence of God, that we're invited into that moment of worship where in the past it was fearful, it was a trembling moment, a moment where you knew that you couldn't approach the very presence of God. But here, God has become the supreme judge. And we shouldn't be frightened by that, because this judge is about setting the world to right, establishing justice the way that it was originally intended to be. And so we come before God as judge because God is finally doing what He originally intended to do. Anyone who is afraid of this kind of justice of God has got the world upside down, because they think that they're at the center. They think that the world revolves around them, when in fact it's always about God. It's always about His justice and His truth and His purpose. And this is where we are able to be invited into this experience of worship and wonder of God. And all of this, the author of this treatise to the Hebrews tells us, all of this is made possible because Jesus is the mediator of this new covenant. And he then goes on in the next verse to talk about the blood that is offered, the sacrifice that is offered. Now, that might be a beautiful image and a wonderful kind of vision, but you think, well, yeah, but what does that have to do with us? How does that impact upon our life? How does thinking about the two mountains of Sinai and Sion, how do we make sense of all of that? Where does that actually impact upon our lives? Well, of course, it's here in the Mass. It's when we gather for the Eucharist that all of this is actually unfolded in our lives, that we experience this same encounter and invitation to come unto God Himself, that the whole of the book of Hebrews is a meditation upon the Mass, just like the whole of the book of Revelation can only be understood when you think about it in terms of the Mass, that the Mass is the place where all of this unfolds. The Mass is the place where we get to experience the very presence of God, where He opens the gates and allows us to be reminded that we're surrounded in our worship by the myriad of angels. We're caught up in this whole encounter with God Himself as the supreme and righteous judge because of all that Jesus has done for us, the offering of His own life, the sacrifice that He makes on the cross. That's why we always gather around an altar, because it's always about the sacrifice of Jesus being made present for us. And so the cross and the altar are always these central symbols of the Mass, because that's what this is all about. And it's only by the sacrifice that Jesus makes and our own invitation, our own extension of that, our own living as disciples, our own being caught up in this work and this action of Jesus, that begins to make sense of all of this. And so the invitation is for us to continue to live in this present moment. So no longer with sacrifices of blood, we don't have to offer animals, because Jesus has already done all of this. But He offers this direct and immediate encounter with God. And when does He offer that? Right now, right in this moment, in this present experience that we're invited to be part of, this whole encounter with God in this Eucharist. Let's hold those prayers and those intentions of the others with us. Let's also bring our hearts before the God who makes Himself available to us in this moment.